Do you remember Pop?
I love Pop. Yes, he's the foster. He's the foster dad to over 50 teens in Brooklyn, and he's remarkable.
50
and he's
like, teens.
He's like, and the thing is that we're like, we're interviewing you because you're amazing. And he's like, what? This is just my calling. No big deal. What are you talking about? Why is everyone trying to interview me? And I'm like, because you're amazing.
That and so much more coming right up on today's episode of The Podspotter. You're listening to The Podspotter. I'm Zach Robidas. There are a shitload of podcasts out there to weed through, and that is why we are here. We do the heavy lifting. We find the diamonds in the rough. And every Monday, we talk to the creators, the hosts, and we learn about their pods, and we play clips, and we hope you find it useful and entertaining. And if you do, subscribe to our little pod by visiting thepodspotter.com and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at thepodspotter for extra content and information on upcoming shows. Thanks, everybody. Then, like we can thank you. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
It's really a pleasure. I've been screening hundreds of podcasts.
Four little Polish kids, two parents, two grandparents, one bathroom. A three-story row home in Reading, Pennsylvania is the setting for your favorite Podspotter's humble beginnings. Across the street was Grandpop's Meat Market, where we dare each other to stand inside the frozen meat locker filled with unidentified hanging carcasses. We lived on kielbasa and pierogies and Big League Chew from Grandpop's store. We were poor, but rich in love and always felt the abundance of family. Mom was one of eight kids, and Dad's two brothers lived around the corner. Chances are this is not your family story. Chances are this story is unique to me and probably three other people on the planet. But the one thing that is the same is that you come from somewhere and there is someone out there that you call family. In the rich tapestry of the human experience, there exists a wide variety of family in all of its forms. And to help us celebrate the richness and diversity of the family experience is executive editor at Parents.com, Julia Dennison, and her brand new podcast, We Are Family. Welcome, Julia, and thank you for sharing this pod with us today.
Thanks, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Cool.
Very important question. With your pierogies, applesauce, sour cream, or both?
Sour cream. Sour cream. What is apples? Who does applesauce?
Me. Oh. I'll take all the I'm a condiment queen, so I'll take the applesauce, I'll take the sour cream, and I will just douse.
You're in Queens too, right? You say on your podcast, you're in the epicenter of the epicenter, right?
That's true. I'm in Sunnyside. Where are you?
I'm in Astoria, New York.
Okay, so epicenter, I could basically throw a rock really hard and probably
Please don't throw rocks. Anyway, we're talking to Julia today about her new pierogi podcast called Pierogies, Pierogies. Where are the pierogies? It's on Patreon. No, we're not. We're talking about We Are Family, of course.
Can I please have that podcast? I would like that.
We are so lucky to have you, and not just to talk about pierogies, but to talk about, you know what? There is no podcast to talk about. I just called you here to talk about parenting, really. Executive editor of parenting.com, I have a pandemic baby here.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We got back from the pediatrician, and she said that our baby's not saying hi or bye. She's not doing hi or bye yet. And we were like, she doesn't have to. She doesn't, we never leave. We're
just say hello, goodbye.
We're here all the time. She doesn't have anyone to say hi or bye to. We're just here. So are all these pandemic babies just going to be like super self-centered and need constant attention? Is that what's going to happen?
That's a really good question. I have a lot of friends who have babies who have speech delays or they're not talking as much. And to your point, it's like, who do they have to talk to?
My gosh.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Because they don't need anything. We're there at a moment's notice.
Right.
We're there.
And, you know, sometimes we're trying to work and can't always give them the attention we want to give them anyway. So we'll
have
to take care of your baby, though, because 9 months, you can't really exactly leave them in a room.
No, not a lot of autonomous
Where's your baby right now?
I should check. I don't know. You put some Cheerios on the floor. She's fine.
It's fine.
I should mention that your podcast has two hosts. Sean T, of course, couldn't be here. So, but that's okay because he's spent a lot of time in my living room helping me with my beach body. So it's fine that he couldn't make it today. He has been here a bunch yelling at me. So it is a co-host situation. But Julia, how do you introduce yourself on your podcast?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm the executive editor of parents.com, but also in my personal life, I am a co-parenting single mom to my daughter Esme, who I call Ezzy. She's 4. So I try to do the whole kind of, basically my idea for the whole podcast, We Are Family, which celebrates the diversity of how people are and be families today. I felt like my family situation was kind of unique because I was co-parenting and didn't exactly have the traditional Instagram filtered nuclear family setup. I was divorced and I was feeling a little bummed out that, you know, working on the parents brand, that maybe I didn't have like the picture perfect family in my head. But then I realized that I wasn't the only one. There's plenty of other people like me. In fact, there's statistics that say that the number of non-traditional, non-nuclear family setups, whether that's intergenerational or co-parenting or divorce setups or what have you, could even be outnumbering the number of traditional nuclear families in soon as 2020 into 2021. So I thought, okay.
So yeah, traditional nuclear family will be the minority.
Yeah, that's what they're looking at. Yeah. Because there are all these different setups. People live with their grandparents, people single parent, people co-parent, people, you know, there's just a lot of ways that people call themselves a family. So I thought to myself, well, you know what? We don't tell that story enough. So for selfish reasons, to make myself feel better, let's do a podcast where we talk about alternative family setups and different unique ways that people become families. So yes.
But you often say that people do try to project perfection in parenting. I loved your article about, hey, it's okay if you screwed up and didn't get the back to school sign. It's fine. You're still a good parent. You don't have to be perfect. I loved that one.
Yeah. And you know, I was feeling that. I was really feeling that lately because I was, again, feeling the pressure to do the back to school sign. And I was like, you know what? I've got enough on my plate.
I had this, just down the street, there was a couple coming out of the house. And they were having they were late. They were clearly late. And they were having an argument about the sign. I don't have time to go back and get the sign. And the kid's right there. And they're having this thing and this thing. And finally, they go back in and they get the sign and they do the picture. And it's just very fraught and very tense. And it was like, what is more important here? That like this kid is a part of this like tense, fraught moment to get this picture? Or the little snap of her, you know, pretending to smile while mom and dad are melting down.
Exactly. It's like what are we who are we doing this for? Yeah, why are we doing this? We're doing this for ourselves as parents because it's not making us happy. Are we doing this to kind of project, to your point, some sort of image of perfect parenthood? Yes, probably, but like that doesn't help anybody else. That makes everyone else stressed because they look at you and think you're perfect, but you just know darn well, like you say, the fights behind those school signs are happening. It's
triple
real
pandemic here, guys. It's okay with the school signs. Forget the school signs.
Let it go.
So how did you and Sean get set up for the pod? How did the pod get started?
So Sean T was on the cover of Parents Magazine last year, and him and his husband, they had twin boys through surrogacy, and they were the first gay couple on the cover of Parents Magazine, which on the one hand, great, but on the other hand, you know, we also had people that saying it's about darn time, and sure, it was about darn time. This was last year, and he was just such a great presence in the magazine, and then when we ran the story online, it got such tremendous feedback, and you know, you were saying that you did his workout in your living room. Well, his followers, he's got a fam. Oh,
it's a cult. It's a Sean T cult.
He was so wonderful and like just such a great cover star. And his story was so wonderful. And I was just thinking of co-hosts because I had this idea for this podcast celebrating the diversity of families today, again, to make myself and my family situation feel better. And I thought he would make the perfect complement to my setup. So, you know, he's a gay dad who had kids through twin boys through surrogacy. He's Black. He's a totally different personality to me. He's got his whole backstory is so different to mine. And you know, when it comes down to it, as you know, because this is sort of meta podcast talk, but his voice, you know, he's got such a different voice and energy to me. So I felt like a really good complimentary co-host. When you think about my story being, you know, the co-parenting white girl in Queens kind of situation. So, Yeah. And then when I asked him, he said, yes, it was like just as simple as it gets. And he's just so sweet. And he likes to text me motivational things and ask me about my dating life and things like that.
So that's awesome. He texts you that way, but he also podcasts as a motivational speaker. And it's just he's a constant, positive force of energy on your pod.
Oh, yeah.
Which and you need because you are, I mean, you're covering, well, okay, you cover a variety of issues from surrogacy to adoption, parenting trans, divorce, parenting as an interracial gay couple, parenting with disability. And a lot of times in the same episode, you're covering these things.
Heavy.
And so, yeah, when I think about your podcast, I get sort of like paralyzed by the weight of all of it when I think of all of it and about, you know, speaking about each topic perfectly. And then I heard your voice. And your advice to allies and to cis white men and cis white people struggling to find their voice, particularly in your Black Families Matter episode. Mm-hmm. And I just want to play, let's listen to Julia for some context. You had just helped your co-host and his partner talk publicly for the first time. You mentioned about their surrogacy, about being an interracial gay couple. And let's hear your words of wisdom there.
You brought up a lot of the stuff that I've talked about, and this is the first interview I'm actually doing with Scott during this time, because he hasn't really spoken much. So you've helped us, Julia.
A lot. I will speak for myself, because that's all I can speak for, is that I have silently been learning, been emotional, almost to tears, and then realizing that maybe this was the path that I needed to be on as far as understanding what is going on and how I can help. Because, like I said, feeling paralyzed or speechless because of all the stuff that's going on is not a good spot. And I'm not saying that that's better than anyone else's. It's just I wanted to help, but I didn't know how. And now I'm learning more that I can. So thank you.
Oh, thanks. I think as white people, we have to get over that discomfort. And we have to, you know, we're taught, as I've been taught as a little girl, to just, you know, behave and be polite. And I think this is a time where you have to kind of throw all that out the window.
I thought that was so brave of Scott, you know, to admit that, like, he is in an interracial gay couple. He's married to a motivational speaker, and he doesn't have the words for right now. You know, that was like, and I hear that. I hear that a lot. Yeah. And I just thought that your words of sort of, hey, get over, like, it's not about, like, just go get messy. Just fine. Be uncomfortable. Yeah. At least you're having the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that little clip is a testament to how wonderful Sean T is. And I remember just at the very beginning of the summer, with Black Lives Matter happening and everything, and the murder of George Floyd, Sean T was texting me and he was saying, thank you for everything you do in terms of lifting up Black voices and telling our stories. And I was like, Sean, stop. Like, why are you you're texting me right now to thank me? My goodness. Like, this is not anything I need to be thanked for. This is like the least I can do because I'm a white woman working in an industry that in a country that's built on systemic racism. And I see it as just like whatever I can do to help, man, you know?
Well, let's continue to lean into the discomfort then. You mentioned you're a single mom and you do a whole episode on single parenting with Emma Johnson. Which I loved.
She's in Astoria too.
Is she? We're getting together for some applesauce pierogies. The three of us. It's happening. she gives some great advice for single moms that I think it's not just for single parents. I think it's for everybody. I want to just play Emma's advice to single parents.
So that's like one little trick that I did for myself when I was going through my divorce and like there were very lean years. And I would always make sure that I had some kind of recurring donation. And I don't care if it's $5 a week or $50 a month that you give to a local charity, to your house of worship, to a candidate that you support. But set up that recurring donation, because when you're going through your budget or your bank accounts every month, it's just going to be a reminder that you have enough. You have enough to give back.
I love the mental trick of that. Just give a little bit so that when you see it, you're like, oh yeah, I'm okay. I gave a little bit.
Totally. It's like a power move to kind of like, it doesn't matter how much you're giving, like the fact that you're actually in the position of giving. And I think her whole conversation around just transforming the image of what it means to be a single mom really was just so helpful for me when I was going through my own divorce. Cause I read her book pretty early on through it. And she's just was like a force of positivity and not just seeing it as like a negative thing, but just like all the kind of the power really that you can take on when you are a single mom and, you know, you have that independence. So
what was Emma's book again?
The Kick-Ass Single Mom, which I recommend. Kick-Ass
Single Mom, right. And there's plenty in that for dads too. I love her take on like, hey, you're not Homer Simpson. You're not, you know, you're not the dad and the, you're not the bumbling idiot. Like, get, right. go help. Go help right. a little. She articulates the importance of co-parenting, actually, co-parenting. Really well. That I think I actually have, I have a little bit of that. I want to play a little of that. But yeah. That's pretty amazing.
It's not even about being a friend with your ex. Like, I'm not friends with my ex. It drives me freaking crazy. And I know I'd drive him up the wall. But just to be basically on the same page, basic respect that the kids are both of your kids. They need both of you. Because by every single study, there are 60 peer-reviewed academic studies that find that equally shared parenting is what is best for kids. When a father is not actively involved in their kids' lives, the chances for dropout, addiction, incarceration. And we're talking about every single demographic. You know, get out of your mind if you think what I just said is only applies to those people, right? This is across every single demographic in this country. And if we can stem that as moms, everyday moms, to take steps, even if the dad's like, eh, I'm good with the every other weekend, go to the judge, be like, nope, this is going to be a 50-50 deal.
See, I just love that. And that's what I went into my divorce and my co-parenting after reading hers and also just being in the parenting space. I read all these studies and I just have seen it. And I've been adamant about splitting that time half and half and the importance of that.
Were you familiar with Emma Johnson's book Before the Pod?
I was, yes. And that's sort of why I got her on the podcast, because I loved her book so much. And it was like a Bible for me when I was figuring out my divorce and helped me remember how important it was to fight for that 50-50 custody. Not, by the way, with my ex, who I get along with pretty darn well. We're he lives 10 blocks away. You know, we're pretty good friends. But with the system, you know, even with my divorce lawyer, it really pushes you to have the mom have majority custody. And when you ask for that 50-50, my lawyer was like, Are you sure? And the whole system's not set up to be half and half. Even to this day, like, they always want to know, like, who has the custody? Hmm. And it's like, well, we're splitting the custody. And some states, I think, are changing around that just because it's the right way to do it. But there's a ways to go, for sure.
Do you think that's part of what you get into in your Happy Divorce episode about where they're talking about they sort of want to fight a little bit? They want a little bit of a lawyer. It's sort of designed. Yeah.
You go into it, usually, I mean, not always, but you can often go into it with an open mind and just think, this is easy. We'll just hash it out. And then the lawyers get in there and kind of make it more difficult for you. So yeah. If you're going through a divorce, it's sometimes, and you're co-parenting, you really want to co-parent equally, then it does take some grit and some sticking to your guns and standing up for what you want.
My sister is a divorce attorney, and she said the first thing she always says on every call is, are you sure you can't work it out? Are you sure?
Try, yeah. Yeah.
People call her for advice. She's like, talk. Please talk. Don't get me involved.
Yeah, go to that Starbucks. Hash it out. It's just the two of you. Yeah.
But sometimes you can't. Sometimes it gets messy. Let's keep going around the pod, because you've talked to so many experts, and I want to just keep playing some of the amazing audio you picked up in your 14 some episodes. Have you done 14 now?
12
episodes of We Are Family.
That's right.
Waiting for you to celebrate the diversity of families, and probably the episode that reduced everyone here at the Pod Spotter to rubble more than any was Barry Abernathy's tale. Can you introduce Barry?
So Barry is the most amazing, wonderful, warm human being. He is a Grammy-nominated banjo player, but he has a birth defect where he's missing some of his fingers. So it's one of those situations where he's like this like rock star banjo player, but he was born, you know, with fewer fingers. So he had his kids, and his kids were, I think, older teenagers. And then his daughter was working at a daycare center, and these kids, these two little kids, I think one was five, one was six, needed a foster home, and they eventually needed adopting. And then he noticed that this little boy had the same birth defect that he had. And so it's just like, it's just so heartwarming. So he then took him in and they fostered and then eventually adopted these two kids. And he's just the loveliest. And I love his accent too.
It's a beautiful story. It's episode 7. It's where I would start with We Are Family when you're ready to dive in. And let's just play a little bit from the first time Barry saw his adopted children.
So I walk in the room and he just looks up and patted his buddy on the head and said, "Hey, look, that's my dad." And I was shocked, you know. And he jumps up out of his seat and he runs up to the front of the class and jumps up. He never even slows down. He just runs and just jumps up. And I'm 6'4", and he just lands about halfway up my body. And I just grabbed a hold of him. He pulls his way up and he grabs my face. He said, "You my dad?" And I said, "Do you need me to be?" And he said, "You my dad." And he just kissed me right in the mouth. First time I ever seen him. And he said, "Hey, look, that's my dad." Told all his classmates, "That's my dad."
Oh my God. I remember interviewing him in that moment and it was just tears. It's like, why did I put on mascara? My gosh.
I wanted to ask you about that. You do get really emotional in that episode.
I don't know if you've experienced Zach becoming a dad.
Oh, 100%. I mean, every podcast I listen to now is like, I'm just waterworks. It's all as a result of her coming into this world too. I mean, I was jaded individual before that, but now I just cool softy anything. Like, what is this Kleenex commercial I am getting crushed by right now? I know. They're selling Kleenex and I'm just in tears. What are you gonna do
of being a parent?
It is the foundation is pulled out from under you and there's no safety net anymore. You are at the whim of the universe. You are
in your heart. Remember when I had my daughter, I was like, oh great, my heart is now outside of my body and vulnerable.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Ugh.
But as a journalist, you don't often hear, you know, folks getting emotional in the stories. And it's just nice. It's refreshing as a listener because it draws us in. And then we're like, what is going on? Julie just folded like a house of cards. Holy.
Just blowing your eyes out over there.
Do you feel at odds with your journalistic training? Or are you just like, "What? This is it. This is what's happening."
I think that's what I love about my beat right now, just working in the parenting space, because it just feels so like where I'm at in my head right now and in life and what's interesting to me. And it's easy for me to get super emotional about the stories. But honestly, I think journalists are good at hiding their emotions. Mm. But I think emotions are often what drive the important stories that we work on, you know, the ones that really matter. And it's actually, I think, the reason why we're all in this biz. Like, we're not in journalism to be making a lot of money. We're in it because we want to make a difference. And if you really kind of unpack that, there's some emotion underneath it all.
There is. I mean, but you got to know going in. It's hard to know like that. I mean, certainly before day one of your podcast, you were like, oh, if I start this, I'm going to be going down a trail here. I'm going to get fairly emotional here. You got to kind of have that conversation with yourself. Like, I'm going to be going into some uncharted territory here.
Yeah. And it gets really personal too, you know, like just talking about my own story, and it becomes a little bit like a therapy session, really.
That's why I started this podcast, just to get experts in my home to help me with my own situation and my own therapy.
Yeah, all selfish reasons here.
It's the best. Yeah. I'm going to keep playing the We Are Family mixtape here and take it over to Pop next. Do you remember Pop?
I love Pop. Yes, Pop. He's the foster dad to over 50 teens in Brooklyn, and he's remarkable.
50
and
teens.
He's like, and the thing is that we're interviewing you because you're amazing, and he's like, "What? This is my calling. No big deal. What are you talking about? Why is everyone trying to interview me?" And I'm like, "Because you'll hear. He's amazing."
Yeah, that is the best part. Very of Pop. Humble, he's though. Very humble and very unassuming, and just Pop. He's just Pop.
Pop.
Let's listen to Pop on being Pop, being called Pop.
You can call me whatever you want. I've had kids that would call me Mr. B, and then all of a sudden, one day they'd slip and they'd say Pop. And it would just continue that way. And that's just how it goes. It's whenever they feel comfortable. But what it means to me is to be available all the time for that person. At 2:00 this morning, I got a text from someone that lived with me, and he said, "I just want to say I was thinking about you, and I just want to say thank you for all that you do for me and all that you've done for me. Whenever I think things are going really bad, I know that you'll be there." And it was so unexpected and so nice, considering how rough around the edges this guy is. He's like was involved with gang and everything, and for him to feel that way was really special to me. And to think about it at 2:00 in the morning and send me a text message, it was important. So I want to have that impact on everybody, that they know that there's somebody here, no matter what, and no matter how bad things might get, that I'm here.
Yeah,
Guy Bryant. He's a saint. He's Pop. Guy Bryant, he's a Pop. Yeah.
And again, just advice for all of us. Yes, he's the foster father of 50 teens in Brooklyn, but like, yeah, great advice for a new daddy. Just be there. Just show him that you're there.
Show up. He has all the great advice too. And he had this really sweet piece of advice where he said, when things are really hard, just remember a very specific happy memory that you had with that, with you, you know, with your child, or in his case, with the foster kids he was working with. And I thought, I'm going to try and remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of just like, if you're arguing, just go to that place. Where like my bedtime last night was,
I don't know if I could really go to that place, but I try every now and then. I'm like, what would Guy do?
Yeah, during the terrible twos, I imagine we'll be transported quite a bit. Is the twos? I'm hearing three-nager now is worse. Okay, than
so
twos.
Here's the thing. The I'm starting to learn. I have a 4-year-old. I think every year is hard, and this every is hard. Year is yeah. Every year is like, I mean, parenting is so weird. It's like, it's so hard. It's like the hardest thing you're ever going to do. Obviously, it's also the most rewarding thing you're ever going to do. And like trying to explain that combo to people who aren't parents is sometimes challenging. But I think terrible twos, I think it's a little bit misleading because it doesn't get easier at 3 and it doesn't really get easier at 4 either. I thought because my daughter can now communicate, I thought, well, this is going to be easier. We can talk about her feelings. And it's like, oh no, she just has bigger feelings and we can talk about them. It doesn't exactly like solve them away.
It's all hard. It's just hard.
If you lower your expectations.
Ah, the seer it is. The secret to all happiness. Lower your expectations. That's across the board for everything. That's wonderful advice. Well, let's hear Pop's advice echoed on the other end. This is why you know it is sound advice, because one of his foster children actually echoes that sort of same sentiment. So you know it's valuable.
I think it's important to respect their privacy, but also allow them to know that you're there for them if they need anything. If you see that your child has been distant, it's always good to reach out to them and sit down with them and have conversations from time to time just to see how they're doing, just to see where their head's at. I feel like that's what everyone wants. They want to have a parent that they can trust and they can come to about anything without worrying about being judged.
I heard a child psychologist once say that teenagers often want potted plant parents. So they want to know that you are consistently in the room and you are there for them, but they might just be walking past you and may not necessarily want you to always engage with them, but they want to know if they want people to engage with you, that you're always there. And I thought that was really funny.
Be a potted plant. I love that, Julia.
Just be there. Just be
there. Just be there. But there was echoed sort of on the other end. By
That was Demetria Mack. And she wasn't one of his foster kids, but she was another foster kid, I think, also in Brooklyn. And she kind of, I think she's at Howard University in her freshman year now this year. But she went through the system and wrote a lot about it for some magazines. So, yeah, it was very cool to hear her perspective. Yeah.
And more from the Podspotter after this. We're here to fill the role of looking for great content for you. And if you like this show, please check us out and subscribe. Visit thepodspotter.com and on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at thepodspotter for lots of good stuff. And please, please, please leave a review. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts and help spread the word. We release every Monday with a review of a great new pod, and we're just going to keep plowing ahead. We're going to keep going here, so please keep listening. And if you have suggestions for future pods, do drop us a note on any of those social media platforms or at thepodspotter.com. Thanks, everybody. Julia, I want to... We like our games here on the Podspotter. We do a little trivia. How well do you know your pod? Typically is the game that we play.
Oh, God. Okay.
But you know your pod because there's only 12 episodes. So
I hope so.
I'm not asking you trivia about your pod. Instead, I'm going to workshop a new game called Pod or Not Pod. Julia, I am going to read you the names of some podcasts. You tell me if they're real or if I just made them up now. Okay. This is Pod or Not Pod, and we're playing for high stakes around here on the Pod Spotter. It is your chance to get some We Are Family swag up on the pod wall.
Okay.
Bookshelf in perpetuity. It hasn't shown up yet. I think they're sending like a We Are Family lunchbox or a We Are Family photo album, I hope. Are you ready for Pod or Not Pod, Julia?
Bring it. Let's do this.
Is this a podcast? Family Secrets. Guests explore family secrets and uncover extraordinary lessons from what the truth can teach us. 3,000 ratings on iTunes. Is Family Secrets real? Pod or not pod?
I'm going to say pod. I mean, I want to listen to it. Can I
You're in?
Pod? I want to hear family secrets.
You can't because it already is a pod. You are one for one. Okay. Family Secrets exists. It is a terrific pod. I think we've even reached out to them. Family Secrets, get on our pod.
Okay.
We love you and we want to tell our dirty secrets. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pod, Family Secrets is great. Great pod. Number two, she's one for one. Pod or not pod. Womb and Gloom, an exploration into the troubling side effects of postpartum depression. 600 ratings on iTunes. Womb and Gloom.
Oh boy, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say not a pod.
Wow.
But I hope it's not a pod because I'm trying to do my own postpartum podcast and that would be competition.
You're just trying to not pod it out of existence.
Not pod.
So that you can have that name that is made up. All you can totally use Womb and Gloom. I don't think it's gonna look very good on a t-shirt. Womb and Gloom is not a pod. You are 100% correct. That is a dumb joke. A bad pun. Are you ready for number three?
I'm ready.
Pod or not pod. Mom Brain. Advice from experts, doctors, and trusted friends on all things being mom.
That's a pod, isn't it?
Oh.
No?
Good. You are good.
Circle gets a square.
Circle gets a square. Three out of three. We, our family, is going up on the book, the swag shelf of
I don't like Book, the name Mom Kate, Brain. I don't even know.
What's that?
I don't like the name Mom Brain. I don't like the phrase Mom Brain.
Let me tell you something. And this is why I enjoyed presenting this game to you for the first time. You Google Mom Pods and you Google Dad Pods. Mom Pods are all about like Mom Brain, Mom's with dispelling shame, Mom and wellness. It's all about, you know, the psyche, the mind. Mm-hmm. And then the Dad Pods are like Dads and Guns, Dads and Video Game, Video Gamer Dad. And it's like, to your point earlier, it's like, no, dude, like you're 50-50 in this thing. Why does Dad get cool hobbies and Mom has to be just like,
you know what? We just
moms
did
and healing.
We did a spotlight called On the Mental Load. And this is the whole concept that moms end up doing this, like more of the parenting, even when you have good dads. And I think there was a study that came out with the pandemic that said that moms felt like something, paraphrasing, but moms felt very anxious about their parenting skills and felt like they weren't doing a good enough job and they were just, you know, feeling stressed. But the dads were like, we're doing great. Like, we're doing this. We're dang. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. I think there's clearly like a number of things at play. There's probably more responsibilities that need to get handed over to the dad that the moms are secretly squirreling away. Yeah. But then also I think that there's like moms need to like let go and let the dads do more stuff too. You know, like even if they feel like they don't change the diapers exactly like they want them to change the diapers. So I think there's like a thing that could kind of happen. But yeah, to your point, I think the Homer Simpson trope of the bad dad, that just reinforces the gender binary and ends up putting more on moms and contributes to the mental load. And this feminist over here says no.
Well, discussions on gender binary seems like a perfect segue into your Ally Sheedy episode.
Oh, yeah.
Ally Sheedy episode 12 comes on the pod in an incredible episode. I learned so much from Ally Sheedy, including how to be a better ally to my own sister-in-law who's transgender. Mm-hmm. And I just thought she was so clear and open with you, but she has years of practice as an advocate. Yes, she's not new to this or what was her advocacy track like?
Well, so her son Beckett, who is transgender, he came out not all that long ago, I think as a teenager. And so Ally Sheedy doesn't necessarily have that much experience. So, and this is, I think, episode two, but she said that Ally Sheedy was just very upfront about what it was like to have her child come out as transgender and all the questions that Ally had for her son, Beckett. And what I really loved about it is that Ally realized that it wasn't Beckett's responsibility to school her and to like tell Ally like what to do.
Yeah.
Ally had to take it on herself to learn about all these things because it wasn't fair for her as a parent to put it onto Beckett because he was already going through so much just transitioning and, you know, working through it all. So, but Ally Sheedy was very honest about that whole, her reaction and processing. Because I think it's easy for, you know, for us to say, like, you know, as a parent, that you obviously want to be accepting of your child in every way. And that's like goal number one as a parent. But obviously, like, you're going to have feelings. And Ally was talking about mostly just from the point of view of like worried about all the kind of medical side of things with Beckett and what actually goes into transitioning from a protective parent point of view. Mm. So she's honest in a way that I haven't heard a lot of people be honest about it. And she's so supportive of her son. And like, it's just the most beautiful thing. So I love that. That's, I think, one of my favorite episodes.
This has taken a while, right? And I, in this particular instance, felt like Beck needed to take me through the steps that he was going through, which I think was probably an incredible pain in the ass for him. I told him he had to take me to the he had to take me to the clinic. I had to meet everybody at the clinic. This is when, Beck, you were still in college then, right? Weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
2014.
Yes, I was a junior.
Right. So we went down to the clinic and I wanted to get some information from everybody there, tell me about the hormones, explain to me what's going to happen, all of this. And they, at the clinic, they basically said it wasn't their responsibility to explain anything to me, that Beck was of age and he could do what he wanted and they didn't exist to serve me. And that was, you know what, they were right, but it threw me into this kind of disoriented place.
Yeah, I just love that. It's like, so and whatever you're doing, whatever it is.
And I think it's a great parable also just for parenthood and like the letting go that happens when your child grows up and this idea that you can't always be the parent. I mean, you're always going to be their parent, but you can't always be parenting them when they're older, you know? And so I think there's that. And I think also just, you know, going into the summer with Black Lives Matter, there's a lot to think about there in terms of me as, you know, being a white person, how it's not a Black person's responsibility to educate white people. I think there's a good analogy there too. It's like white people, we need to educate ourselves on this and do better. So anyway, yeah, I just feel like that sentiment is like such an important one. And she's so great and honest about it.
She's at odds though with the need to educate herself, but then also like her desire to do the research, but then to know, but you, what's going on with you? Let's hear, Ellie.
But I needed to subjectively, I wanted to understand what exactly Beck's steps were, what exactly was going on with Beck. And I think in any situation, to have your parent want to, you know, be super involved in your emotional development would be infuriating. In this particular instance, I just needed enough information to be on the level with him when we were having a conversation. Do you know what I mean? I wanted to know, okay, so I can read about how hormones affect the gender transition. I can read about that. This happens. But what I want to know is what's going on with you.
What I observed in my own family was my wife did all the research, you know, about her sister transitioning and read all the books, and nothing could prepare her for sisterly jealousy. Like, I observed sisterly jealousy for the first time in my wife, who grew up with two brothers.
Yeah.
And then for the first, you know, we were at Christmas, and her mom gave my sister-in-law some hand-me-downs from her mother. And I watched my wife get jealous of not being the only girl and not getting these clothes for the first time. I was like, oh, nothing could prepare you for that.
Yeah.
Like, we and talked about it afterwards. It was like,
I so appreciate Allie and her honesty, because she just talks about it in a really like raw, true way as a mom.
For sure. Let's move around here to your adoption episode with Michael. Super important for me personally. I'm sorry to always make these podcasts about me, but that's the only thing I know how to do. My wife and I found out that medically we can't have another, we shouldn't have another child after her breast cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And so I just love the adoption episode, hearing from someone who was adopted, hearing from Michael, hearing his tale, and hearing his thoughts on just being honest with your adopted children. Let's hear from Michael himself.
You know, obviously having an older sister who's 2 years older who was adopted, and then me, my parents were always very open about the fact that we were adopted. And I know that's not the case in all situations where adoptees don't know until sometimes later in life. They just always put it out there that they, if we ever wanted to find our biological families, our birth families, that they would be helpful in that regard and in whatever way that they could be. You know, they were closed adoptions, so it wouldn't be necessarily an easy thing. But certainly if we ever had that feeling, and I just appreciated that because I think, yeah, in terms of knowing where you come, first of all, knowing that you're adopted, I think is really important. And it's hard for me to understand why parents would not share that information with a kid, because I think, you know, it was always an integrated part of who I am and my identity. And my sister and I, it was funny, we both kind of felt this interest in knowing who our biological families were. Not that we didn't love our own mom and dad, but, you know, again, me like not really looking like the people in my family, I had a curiosity and a desire to know more. And it wasn't until after my parents passed away that we kind of started that journey in earnest, my sister and I.
I imagine this is probably a controversial topic, and you don't really endorse any sort of, you know, experience one way or the other. You make a pretty strong point not to do that. You just sort of present, here is this person's experience, and let people glean from that what they will. And not every situation, you know, can you be 100% honest, but it was definitely insightful hearing Michael's experience.
Yeah. Also another episode that got me super emotional, and he got super emotional, and it's a beautiful thing. But no, I think there's a thread of honesty. I think it's always been sort of central to my approach to parenthood that kids understand more than you give them credit for. And often we have these adult subjects that we think that kids shouldn't be involved in or they need protecting from. And if you just have to look at Mr. Rogers, who was happy enough to be talking about death with kids on his show, you know, to realize that kids understand these subjects that feel heavy, and protecting them from them, as much as you know that might come from a good place, may not always be what's best or what's most helpful for the kids. So hearing him say how important it is to just be honest about adoption, I thought that was just so interesting. And there's another episode that we have on single moms, and Adrienne Farr, who's a coworker of mine, she's a single mom by choice, and she had a sperm donation to be able to have her daughter. And she also speaks of the importance of allowing her daughter to find the father if she wants to find the father. Similar kind of sentiment. And I think honesty truly is the best policy when it comes to your kids, I think.
Do any of them mention what age? Is it sort of just like always just a given? Like, is it just sort of always offered? Or I wonder if he talked about when.
You mean in terms of talking to your kids about the fact that they're adopted?
Yeah.
I think it's really important. Kids usually understand things, are aware of things earlier than you think. But I think what's most important is to start a diverse conversation about what family looks like with your children from a young age, whether they're adopted or not. So, you know, if you choose your books wisely that you read to your kids, and you choose your language about how you speak to them about family, then that kind of like, you know, mom and dad family setup, nuclear setup, it's not necessarily the norm for them. It just might be one way of having a family. So I think, you know, whether or not you talk to your kids about it from day one, I think the importance of talking about how some kids look different from their parents because, you know, they might come from other parents, but that, you know, or they might come from somewhere else in terms of biologically, and like, you know, but their parents are their parents and they love them very much. But then the same thing when it comes to talking to your kids about the fact that some kids have two moms, some kids have two dads, some kids live with their grandparents. We did a story on parents.com recently about how teachers have started talking about your grown-ups versus your mom and dad when in schools, so that because they start to find that when they say mom and dad, so many kids are like, well, actually I live with my grandparents. Well, actually I only live with my mom. Actually I live with two moms, you know? So, language that you use with your kids and the books you read to them, I think are really important. And just the kind of the picture that you paint for them when it comes to what family looks like is important. And that's a way of starting that conversation without actually actively going into the conversation, I think.
You get into that in another one of your episodes. It's the I'm going to call her Meadow because I'm an idiot.
Oh, no.
What is
Jamie Lynn Sigler?
Jamie Lynn Sigler talks about how her child is like,
you know, she felt like she had to protect too much, so much protecting from living with disability. She was parenting with disability, and she was like, and then she tells that story. One day, her kid was like, "No, you have to go slow for my mommy. She takes more time." She's so beautiful.
So
it's like,
cute.
Oh, I'm not, you're protecting me. I'm not only protecting you. This is a two way.
That's right.
Sort of thing.
The kids, they know, and they know, and they understand. You know.
I want to get back to Michael and play one more piece from Michael's adoption story. Mm-hmm. And this is where he shares the story, oh my gosh, of his mom being worried that she would have an extra connection with her biological kids and not have the same connection with Michael.
And she was so worried that she was going to somehow love this kid more than she loved my sister and I because he was a part of her, you know, physically. And so she didn't want to do any of the things that she didn't want to do anything different with my brother than she did with my sister and I. So she wouldn't breastfeed him. And she got a lot of flack for that from people who were like, you know, that's terrible. You should breastfeed your baby. And she's like, but I didn't breastfeed my other babies. And she didn't want to have a connection there. And it's funny because, you know, we never felt like she felt any differently about any one of us. We were all exactly the same in her eyes, my father's eyes. You know, they raised us the same. They treated us the same. And she was like, you were my baby the second you arrived on our doorstep, you know?
I mean, I'm telling you that it's an emotional episode and he's so wonderful and honest about it, but oh my goodness, that broke me.
Yeah. Anybody that's been around someone breastfeeding, anybody that's seen the bond between mother and child and just, you know, keeping life alive with that and what that union is like, to give that up because you are afraid of, like, that woman sounds incredible.
Incredible. And oh my gosh, totally. As somebody who, I breastfed my daughter until she was two, so like I really felt that one.
At times it feels disingenuous to just dip in and out of the most extreme moments from people's podcasts, but at the same time, like, I need to highlight these moments because they're freaking beautiful. And so I'm just thankful that you're, you know, that you're making this and that it's out there.
Oh,
you so have like the most diverse playlist of most podcasts that we've screened, and you celebrate all the things that make families different, and I'm curious about what commonalities you've discovered, the sort of connective tissue from all of these stories.
Yeah, I think that it doesn't matter what your family looks like. It doesn't matter if you're biologically related. It doesn't matter if how you became a family. Once you're a family and once you're in the family, and the family can look like two co-parenting parents who are divorced, but they're family together. It can look like a single mom by choice. It can look like an adoptive family. It can look like foster kids. It can look like, intergenerational families, kids living with their grandparents. It doesn't matter that, like, love is, I know it's cheesy, but it's so true. And love is what makes a family. And a family loves each other, doesn't matter how they came to be. So I think that's like the main thread throughout the entire podcast. But then there's sort of little sub threads out there, like the importance of being honest with kids, and just the fact that kids understand things at a level, you know, that may be more mature than you even realize, that they're very tuned in to the dynamics of family, that they're very much an active part of the family, that you should feel prepared to kind of include them and talk to them and not hide them from these differences and not try and protect them. I think I always tell this one story, and I think I might have told it on the podcast, but I remember I was at my daughter's dance recital, and I saw all these little cute nuclear families of the moms and the dads and waiting for their kid to come off stage. And I looked at Ezzy's row, and it was like, she was filling up like a whole entire row at the recital, like my parents and, you know, at the time it was her dad's girlfriend and her dad. And it's like this whole village was taking up all this space and there for her. And this, you know, this little 3-year-old, I think she got out on stage and froze basically and didn't actually dance, but we were there.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? She gets this huge extended family. And of course she'd always have her grandparents no matter what, but my parents have stepped in a way they might not have stepped in if I hadn't divorced and been co-parenting. So her bond with her grandparents is stronger as a result. So I started to just see the positivity out of what I originally thought of as just a purely negative situation. And I realized that there's good, and Ezzie's going to come out of it with like good life experience that other kids might not have, and things to give and positives. So in this podcast is all about that too. So just the fact that families look different, that's not a bad thing. And kids are resilient, but also kids are proud of their families, and they're proud of the fact they live with their grandmother. They're proud of their setup. So I think it's about, you know, fostering that.
Well, you say sort of in the intro that it's about celebrating the diversity, but I mean, every podcast I listened to, there was something that applies to even a more traditional nuclear family. And so I think that, not to argue with you, but a better description is that it celebrates sort of how diverse families are the same.
That's true.
Commonalities are...
We're all the same. Yeah.
We are family.
This is family. That's a really good point. And I think, and I remember that We Are Family actually started as an editorial series on parents.com where we're featuring stories about diverse family situations. And I was very adamant. We did one about a transgender dad, cisgender mom raising kids. And that was one of the first ones. And I was very adamant, and had a video included. And I was very adamant about the fact that I didn't want it to be like, look at this interesting family situation. It was like, actually, this is just a regular old family. This is just what a family looks like to somebody, you know? Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, I want to play one. I would be remiss if I didn't add Catherine Wolfe to the playlist, because my goodness. I mean, this could have all been Catherine Wolfe. I could have started. Yes. And
she's amazing.
Your pod has been a tremendous daddy resource, and I do feel better equipped for whatever life situation throws at me, and for some situations that life already has thrown at me. I felt Catherine, I felt like she was speaking directly to me in her notes on parenting through chronic illness. Let's just hear from Catherine.
It is all about transforming your mind, and that's everything, that when we can take thoughts that are negative captive and change them. You know, life is not about what happens nearly as much as it's about how we think about it, how we move forward from it, how we remember it. It's all about the story we're telling ourselves about ourselves. We are called absolutely to live into every moment of life. And what that means is the life right in front of your face, not the life you used to have, or the life you thought you would have, or the life you thought you were entitled to have, or the life you, whatever. The life you're in right now is what we believe you are supposed to live into and champion and cherish and be about that life. And at times such as this weird social distancing life we find ourselves in, the temptation would be to reject that, to say, I can't handle this. But the reality is that you can.
Could you tell us about Catherine?
Oh, my goodness. Catherine is one of the most amazing people I think I've ever spoken to. She had a brain hemorrhage at age 26. Prior to that, she had the, like, quote unquote, perfect, idyllic family situation with a lovely husband. And she was pregnant, and she had her baby. And I think she had the hemorrhage right around the time she was having her baby. And oh my goodness, of course, it was hugely devastating. And she had to just reframe everything she thought she was going to have in her life and her ability. Like, she couldn't walk, she couldn't do anything, and she couldn't even swallow. And she talked about the fact that, like, she loves food, and like the idea she couldn't even eat food. I mean, it's just so awful, but she's so positive, and she's brimming with so much positivity and about like seeing these situations that just look bad no matter how you package it as like somehow positive or opportunities to see life differently. And she's just remarkable. That episode is just the best to listen to, because as a parent, there's always moments where you feel like this is really hard, and this is really like, you know, you can feel really low about all kinds of things in life, and certainly in parenthood. But she really kind of helps put things in perspective. But like, that's her to a T. And her relationship with her husband is so lovely. He's so supportive. And to me, their relationship, they are relationship goals. Like, he is he is there for her in such a beautiful way. And the way they kind of just, it's worth reading their book, Hope Heals. I recommend it. But yeah, it's just all about being positive, even when life throws things at your way that just seem impossible.
Yeah, I love her stuff on just rewiring and, you know, this is your life. It doesn't matter what your expectations
were.
Again, back to your lower your expectations.
Yeah, or just like acceptance, I think, and just being mindful and just thinking, because we're so, and I think the pandemic has been contributed to this. I know that we're always thinking ahead, like, where are we trying to go? Like, where do we see our kids? Where do we see our life? Like, where are we going to buy our house next? Where are we going to go to high school? And she's just like, you know what, all for everything that you think you know about your future, you can throw that out the window because no one knows what's happening in the future. Yeah. So, you know, just trying to parent in the now and see where you're at and take it one step at a time. It's, it was a great message for me.
For sure. Parenting with disabilities. Again, advice, a little something that we can all take away from it, much like all of your episodes. Mm-hmm. Who is listening to your podcast? Who are your subscribers? Who have you heard from?
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of, we've had reviews and people writing to us just saying thank you. I think people just like to hear, to be validated, certainly with our larger audience. And we have a big national audience of parents, and we reach majority of parents in America today. And one of my kind of editorial missions is to present content in a way that's relatable and makes people feel a little bit less alone. Because I think parenthood can be very isolating, even though you're surrounded by, you know, you can have mom friends, you can have dad friends, you can parent with your spouse. But like, when it comes down to it, sometimes you feel like you're making these decisions, instant decisions as a parent, and you're kind of making them by yourself. And you want to just feel like you're doing the right thing, or you want to feel like you're not alone in some of these feelings that you're having, because it can be so hard. So with my content, I always want to help out everybody to make them feel like they're not the only ones going through all kinds of things that come with parenthood.
It seems uncontroversial to me, that sentiment that you're raising. And yet I have to ask sort of a tough question, in that, like, we get into the stats around here as part of our meta pod about podcasts, and in looking at your reviews on your podcast, I don't think I've ever seen one sort of more divisive, where there's so many 5 stars and so many 1 stars and not so many in the middle. And I'm wondering if you sort of wear that as a badge of honor of like, see, there's more work to be done, clearly. Like, that, like, do you, is that like...
Yeah, I feel like, I do feel like with, as a content leader, and if as a, somebody who's trying to make a difference in this world, if you don't piss off people, you're not doing enough. I think sometimes. And I think when you have a large audience and something on a subject of parenthood has, you know, all kinds of people from all different political backgrounds and all kinds of from all different parts of the country and all different experiences. So you're never going to please everybody, because everybody is such a huge, diverse audience. But I think, you know, it's really important to just make sure for myself that I continue to be on the right side of history. But I think some of my challenges is sometimes presenting content. So during Black Lives Matter, we did a piece that did really well, which was Why All Lives Matter Does Not Work in Terms Simple Enough for a Child. And I was broke it down, and it did super well, because secretly I knew that people weren't reading it to tell their kids. They were sharing it with their, you know, the relatives that needed
their
to
in-laws
read terms that, simple enough for a child. And I think that it's important that we do content that can win over just one little step at a time.
Yeah.
Just by showing, in terms of this podcast, just by showing that, you know, people who may not have been exposed to a diversity of experiences potentially, or maybe they've never met somebody who's transgender, or maybe they come from a context where they're around a lot of people that look like them, and that's fine. But I'm hoping that by presenting this podcast, even if they want to give us a 1-star review because it's not what they're used to and makes them feel uncomfortable, I'm hoping at least that I get in the back of their head, and all that they take away is exactly what you said earlier, that this is just about families. Regular, like, they may look different on the outside, but they're the same on the inside, and it's just love like anything else. And they're just trying to do the same things that every family's trying to do, and that's get by every day, pack those school lunches, get back to school, do the juggle. that at the end of the day, we're all more similar in terms of who we are as families than we are different.
You bring up a great point about exposure, and it's something that we take for granted. That's like lefty liberals living in Astoria, Queens, and you know. Like,
yep. Yeah.
But I remember in college, I wrote some paper about, like, you know, if we, like, conscription just made 18-year-olds live in a different area code for a little while, like, mm-hmm. you urban folks go work a farm, and then people on the farm go live in the city for 1 year, we'll all, you know, learn that we're not just, you know, out here crazy yeah. people trying to burn the country down, my God, get a little empathy. Right. But instead of that, why don't we all just listen to We Are Family, the podcast? Mm-hmm. Probably a lot
yeah.
cheaper.
Yeah, and we have a good around. We have a good episode with our last episode and with Dasha Polanco from Orange is the New Black, and she's sure. Dominican, and we talk a lot about multicultural parenting and the importance of exposing kids to a lot of culture. And I talk about too just the fact that, I mean, talking about Queens, like, I think Queens is an awesome place to be raising kids, you know, just yeah. talk about, you know, exposure to so many different cultures. It's the most diverse urban population in the world. I think I've seen statistics that said that. So yeah.
We like to wear that on our sleeve as like a sign of our activism, though. But then you listen to Nice White Parents and you're like, oh
shoot.
There's work to be done here.
That's exactly a good point. Like, we can't just be like, I live in Queens. Check.
Yeah, no.
Like, Seamless has a lot of options.
No.
Not enough.
Well, it's a great pod. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. And yeah, start with that Dasha Polanco episode. What was her quote about plants? Do you remember that? I could play it if you don't remember it. But she was like, once you...
Dasha Polanco?
Yeah. She had that great thing about you can never straighten it back up. Once a plant grows crooked, you can never...
If a tree grows crooked, you can never straighten it out or something. I remember when she said that, I was like, oh, shoot. I hope I'm not raising a crooked tree.
I'm sure I am.
No hope.
Melting this kid's brain by always being here waiting on her. Serving her hand and foot. Julia, it is the last 5 minutes of our podcast, which means that they've dropped the kids off at school, or uh-huh. parents have finished cooking their meal and they're not listening anymore. They've shut it off. No one is here. It's just the two of us, okay. which means it's time for, you know, no one is listening. So go ahead, use this time for whatever you'd like. Recite a poem or tell off a former boss, whatever you want.
That's
no one cares.
I'm not telling off a former boss.
Sing a song, whatever you want. Well, I can go first because I got one. I got to talk to Uncle Pat here. I'm going to keep it in the family and talk to Uncle Pat, okay. who gave me my first job at the catering company. And I was a dishwasher at like 15 or something, 14. It was like one of my first jobs at a catering company. Horrible job, you know, just terrible. The things that I would see back there in the dish area from a catering company, these sheet pans, hotel pans, are out in the sun all day, just baked ziti on there. I can't get it clean. And so every hour or so, Uncle Pat, I would pretend to go to the bathroom and play Snake on my old Nokia. And I'd steal from you, basically. I'd steal. That was stealing. I was not working. I was just playing Snake on my phone in the bathroom, pretending to use the toilet. And I'm sorry. And I'm using the last 5 minutes of my episode to come clean about it. I apologize, and I love you.
I guess for me, I think, you know, and it's a 38-year-old woman who's just divorced, and, you know, it's like, I feel like I was a 38-year-old woman when I was 20. And I got married at 24. I was like very like on my life path from the start. I graduated college. I was like, okay, majoring in art history. I met my husband while I studied abroad. He was British. Like we then got married, and I lived in London for 10 years. And I was just like, you know, talk about that whole, you know, Catherine Wolfe saying how like you just don't know what your future is going to be like. I was just like powering through this like course in life where I was like, this is what I'm doing and it's going to be fine. And I remember people saying, if you get married young, like the chances of your relationship working out is not great. And I thought, well, not me. Not I.
You don't know us.
You don't know
Have you
us.
Seen how many likes a wedding photo got on Facebook?
Beautiful wedding. It's still the best wedding ever. I mean, I think you can have the best wedding ever.
Can't take that away.
Worst.
Doesn't matter, yeah.
But then, you know, we're good friends. Like, we met in college. Like, this is why we can co-parent, because we kind of grew up together. But now I feel like I'm in my 30s, and it's like this whole new thing and dating and... And it's like just a whole new horizon of, I guess, like, I feel like there's like, I'm like doing my 20s now.
Oh, wow. Weird apps. 30. What weird apps are out there?
There are, well, there's like the not, there's just the boring dating apps now. Oh, okay. But I've met, you know, I'm sort of like early into dating a guy. And I just feel like I just, it's, you know, I do feel a little bit like I'm like doing my life a little bit.
You did 38 when you were 20 and you're 38
that's
doing 20.
Right. I'm basically 24 that's cool. Right now. No, it's good.
I think as long as you feel like your head is where your feet are, you're in good shape.
I'm trying to be chill. I'm trying to be a cool girl.
There you go, Julia Dennison, trying to be a cool girl. No one's listening. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Julia, thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for sharing the pod. Anything to tease us with for season two?
Yeah, I think if people want to DM me, I'm on Instagram, Julia Dennison. I'm always looking for stories to feature, whether that's like on the podcast or just on the website or video or social channels. I'm always looking for cool, interesting family situations. So hit me up.
Well, we need a follow-up episode with Barry, I hope, and you know, one of the later seasons of We Are Family.
Hope so.
The two of these men sharing this birth defect and celebrating music at the end of the episode, you're going to be done. You're just going to be done, but enjoy
it. Yep. Stick a fork in there.
This has been the Pod Spotter, where we showcase the pods that you need to know about. But if you have one that you think we should know about, please let us know via thepodspotter.com or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram at thepodspotter. Thanks, everybody. This has been Zach Robidas. The Pod Spotter is created by the Price Brothers, produced by Oink Inc. Radio, associate producer Tori Adams, and is recorded and produced at Baker Sound in Philadelphia.